This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to be with you today. Matt and Brett here today. Brett, we have an impending crisis on the side of the building, man. That looks like a hornet's nest.
Yeah, it's very early in the construction phases on whatever they're building there.
We send Patrick out with a broom. What do you think?
We don't knock the thing down. Come on, we need bees.
No, but they have to be so close to the front door of the building?
All right. Well, you just got to be a little prepared to walk in. It'll make everyone a little more agile as they walk into the station.
Okay. Yeah, that's the trick we're going with. All right, fine. We've basically bowed down to our bee overlords, I guess. That's going to be what it is. Fine. I want Patrick as my guard as I go in. I'm going to throw him at the bees if they start coming after me, okay?
All right, I'll let him know tomorrow.
Just FYI, that's part of his duties. It is in the contract. Today, an exceptional day. Dr. Joe Eastman's going to join us in the 4 o'clock hour to give us an update on COVID. We've got some latest COVID numbers, which are actually really good for Minnesota, but still, we'll get to that. And then also, he wants to talk climate. But this is like the pantheon of great guests today. Got Dr. Joe in the 4 right now. Of course, Cliff Schechter is kind enough to join us today. If you're not following his Blue Amp YouTube channel, you are wrong. That's at youtube.com/C Schechter. You can find it there. He's kind enough today to take some time to talk about the impending joy that we're about to have with the third indictment of Donald Trump. Hi, Cliff.
Hey. The third indictment is the one where I think you get a free set of steak knives.
Ah.
That's kind of cool.
Well, or can you get those Archie glasses that Arby's used to carry? You know, that'd be nice.
I think so. You deserve something. I mean, it takes work to get indicted 3 times, so it's impressive work.
Indeed.
Plus, I really think we could get – I was thinking the other day, considering he had a similar number of of charges against him in each of the past 2 cases, like he was in the 30s. I think we should sort of set up a pool on the over-under and how many charges we have coming his way this time. Will it be another impressive sort of 30-something performance? Can he up it to 40? Or is it only going to be like 15? I don't know. I guess we're going to have to see.
You and I always start talking about baseball, but I know you're not very happy about the Yankees. Twins are, Reds, pretty good. But I'm going to throw a curveball.
I'm excited about the Reds.
I'm going to throw a curveball at you right now, okay? Who is the worst baseball team, the Oakland A's or the Kansas City Royals?
Whew.
That is a rough one. Yeah, that is.
I think it probably is Oakland, but I think it's close.
I'm going to say it's the Royals for this reason. The Royals are trying, and they're this bad. Oakland, they're already thinking of Vegas, and they're already gone. And so, and knowing that ownership team, they basically just unloading. They're playing a bunch of AAA players because they know they're not going to get a lot of people showing up in Oakland. They're just waiting, biding their time till they can move to Vegas, and that's it. So Oakland's trying to tank. The Royals are really trying to win, and they're that bad. And this was a World Series team a few years ago.
Yours is arguable. Yours is arguable. What's hilarious is I was going to say the exact same thing as you, but come out on my side, which is my definition was to be that they're worse in Oakland because they're not even trying. And that's such an insult to their fans and an insult to people who love that team for years. That it just, to me, it's so against what baseball is supposed to be. But I understand your definition too. But to just spit in your fans' faces that way, something about that makes me feel even worse about them. But okay.
Well, no,
I get what you're saying.
I feel sorry for Oakland and Kansas City to a point, because Kansas City, I think this is what your future is. You and I, when we were kids, Oakland had all 4 major teams. They had the Golden Seals in the NHL. The Golden State Warriors played over there until, a few years ago. And then they built their new arena over in San Francisco itself. The Oakland Raiders were there, and the A's. And they are, 2 years away from – they will not ever have another major league sports franchise. And they're not even going to – no owner is going to even threaten to move to Oakland as a threat. And I think Kansas City is not that far away, although I think the Chiefs are a little bit more ingrained there. I don't see that Kansas City being a market they're going to be trying to keep going.
We always get a little worried about that here because, we're one of the smallest markets. if not the smallest, I think it's close. It may be Milwaukee, maybe, I don't know, to have both a baseball. Oh, no, Milwaukee does not. That's right. They don't have a football team. It's in Green Bay. So we've got, I think we're the smallest market to have both a professional baseball and football team. Mm-hmm. And so we get nervous because when the Castellini family, the jerks that they are, you know, every time something comes up here where they're not spending enough money, they're just like, whoa, what are you going to do? You know, like they can move them somewhere else. Now, baseball let the first and most, you know, this is coming from a New York Yankees fan. I grew up in New York, right? I still have to admit, the Reds are the first and most historic franchise in that they were founded in 1869. They were the first major league franchise. And, I mean, there was a tradition which they got rid of where the president always threw out the first ball here. There was always a home game. I don't know why they got rid of that 15 or 20 years ago, but that used to be a thing. Like, so, you know, Cincinnati has a place in baseball history. Also, were the ones playing who won that World Series that the White Sox threw. So, you know, stuff like that. But you do get nervous, right? Like, they could move one of those teams away from here. I mean, not Minneapolis, obviously, isn't the hugest market either. You know, Pittsburgh, some of these Midwestern ones, like, we get concerned. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I see what is happening in Oakland, and I feel for them. Yeah. Because I feel like that could happen someday here.
Well, and you can see the up and coming towns they want to get to. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Salt Lake City becomes much more attractive over the next few years on some of these things. But you know, at the same time, though, I mean, I think, you know, it's amazing to me. I think that they're going to. I think the future of these franchises is a smaller town, and I'll just throw like a. Maybe like in Austin, Texas, where they're not looking for four major sports franchises or five with Major League Soccer or six with the WNBA. They're not looking for that. They just want one. So they'll convince their tax base to basically build a $2 billion basketball arena to lure a team there just to get the one team. And so I think that that's eventually where it's going to go. I could see that. But yeah, Oakland, you know, it's interesting. We don't talk about this much, but that is a town which has in 40 years has become persona non grata, and you're just not going to get another team out there again.
I feel bad for anybody. Nobody should grow up rooting for a franchise like that and just have them leave. Hell, I mean, I think there's still suffering Brooklyn Dodgers fans out there who haven't been able to get, and I don't blame them. I mean, you grew up rooting for something and then it gets, you know, pulled out from under you. In any case.
Donald Trump, of course,
about stuff being pulled out from under people, Donald Trump.
Speaking of, you know, feeling sorry for his supporters, are we going to see an indictment today? I think it's going to be tomorrow. When do you think the indictment's going to come down? Because it is going to come down.
I mean, it's any moment now. I don't think I can tell you a day. I don't have some inside knowledge, but I do think there's a great chance it's this week. And if not, obviously, I believe it's going to be a very hard time getting through next week. I mean, the guy got a letter that he's a target. he seemed to, which he then went and screamed and yelled about. I made a fun video about it where I read it. I mean, it was hilarious. It was such a classic Donald Trump. I won really big in the primaries. Everybody, you know, 85.7%. So I won really big. Like, you know, it's just like, it's like the worst run on sentence I've ever read in my life. It just goes on to the point of where you're contemplating just sort of ending it all. He's that scared. Whenever he reacts like that, like a child does, like when a child's screaming, well, they're scared of something. He's literally never developed beyond that of like a 7-year-old emotionally. So you kind of know that the walls are really closing in when he's freaking out to that point. I find it really interesting. Somebody was pointing out that they think Rudy Giuliani turned on him, which would just be beautiful. Mm-hmm. Although Rudy Giuliani better get time in prison. That's all I have to say. I think we're getting closer and closer. I mean, you know, we may have an experiment ready to come to see if our country, in its wisdom, if we've gone so backwards. If we've so re-entered the dark ages that there are enough people in this country willing to elect somebody in prison. I'm not sure exactly how that would work. It would make for a pretty funny TV show, like a sort of ongoing, you know, maybe Veep 2 or something. I don't know. But God help us.
The feeling is that someone's turned on him. whether Giuliani, whether Mark Meadows, that's the other name you keep hearing a lot about, is that someone has turned on him. But, I mean, regardless, those two.
I think it could be possibly both. I mean,
yeah, it could.
I'm not, again, I don't know. They may not need more than one. I'm not a lawyer, but they each, I think, had some different sides of that equation.
Well, actually, you just bring up a really good point. Do you think maybe they wanted both of them to flip because of what we're dealing with here? Is that now, you know, you can't say it's one guy. It's his former chief of staff. It's his former, you know, chief legal advisor. It's both of them have flipped on him. I mean, maybe that's the whole goal, is to get both of them in, because it becomes very difficult to just dismiss it at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that actually may be it. Because, again, you have to remember, I mean, we're not dealing with a normal situation here, right? Mm-hmm. We're dealing with a former president of the United States. And as still strange as it is to utter those words about him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you might want all of the firepower possible. I would think you would. The danger is always going to be here. And granted, they've got judges, and judges can do – I do know enough about the law to know judges can have directed verdicts. You know, if juries are ridiculous, and, you know, there are ways to do, but if you're talking about just a regular jury, you know, what are the chances that you're going to get 12 people and, like, not one of them? I mean, I guess we've done it already, so I guess there are good chances, because we have, but, you know, there's so much chance you get one MAGA nut on there, right? That's all it takes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's always been part of my worry.
Yeah.
Is he so radicalized a portion of our population beyond any semblance of sanity that we have to worry about that?
Oh, I think that's actually, within certain circles of the far right conservative MAGA crowd, that's the plan. And, you know, just, you know, they know he can't win. So they basically try to do something to Biden before the election, and right before the election, and make it impossible for the Democrats to replace him. So, you know, the Republicans themselves are terrified. Are they, you know, there's always this grim kind of mentality, and I'm not a big fan of, you know, rooting for someone to die or anything like that. And sometimes people, you know, kind of go overboard with that. But it almost feels like this is the entire Republican strategy to deal with Trump. Is just, he's there. He could be 92. I highly doubt he'll make it that far, but he could be 92. And as long as he wants to run, we're not going to get in the way. He's the guy. It's just, that seems to be the mentality with this guy, is that with the Ripardi, is that no matter what, as long as he's around, he gets to dictate what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely it. That's been their strategy since literally the moment that he started besting them in, you know, in primaries, making them look stupid. There was a period of time before I feel like all of this was locked in. And if any of them had any courage, between all of them, if one of them had, they could have, you know, they could have stopped this thing, but they let him create this cult of personality. Fox got in on it too, and they let it go because they all were scared of being the one, you know, to be the one to actually have the courage to stand up to him and maybe pay the price of losing a primary because of it, you know. And so they let him go and go and go, and he solidified, you know, people that probably were, you know, maybe thought he was funny, thought he was interesting, and they went down a rabbit hole with him, you know, and now they all realize that. I mean, you just would never think it makes no sense, for example, that Ron DeSantis, who's another joke worthy of laughing at a lot, that the meatball pudding guy, Ron DeSantis, would literally, when the stuff came out about Trump, was on TV in an interview defending Trump. And it just shows you how screwed up that party is, because nobody would ever defend their primary opponent, who's attacking them, by the way. Mm-hmm. Constantly. It's the dumbest, but it makes you realize the grip that Trump has on that party. And at the very least, you know, Asa Hutchinson, Chris Christie, will be wherever the wind blows. I don't give him any credit, and I give Asa Hutchinson very little. But, you know, at least they're trying from that vantage point. You might lose, but lose fighting. I will promise you, you will never beat an opponent in a game where people have to choose who they like more if you're sitting there defending your opponent all the time and saying nice things about them.
Yeah. Well, and maybe what they're doing is they're trying to, not so much Christie, but Hutchinson might actually be setting himself up for 2028, where basically, you know, he goes out there, he's the most vocal guy against Trump. Trump gets beaten badly by Biden, another 4 years of Biden, then he can come back and say, hey, you guys should have listened to me. Now you're thinking about going with him again? Come on, this makes no sense. And it's that's It is sad it's going to take that kind of timeline to pull the Republican Party back from the cliff that it's at. But that's, I think, where we're looking at. I think people are looking at this long game of, okay, fine, we'll allow this to blow up in our face a few more times, and then we'll basically be able to come back and say, if we don't find our moderate stance again, we're doomed.
No, I think that's actually an excellent point, and I wasn't even thinking of that. So I think it's a smart thing to bring up, especially for the ones that aren't sort of in their category where they're that much older. You know, they're trying to set things up for 4 years down the road. But my gosh, I mean, do they realize what's going to what can happen here?
Yeah.
I guess they don't, or they're too scared to take it on. All the different ways he can go. At a moment's notice, he can't accept anybody else leading besides him. So if he is alive 4 years from now, there's nothing to say that he won't spend the entire time attacking the Republicans. You know, he will say, whoever the Republican nominee is, you have to show complete fealty to me during your entire run and say everything I did was right and how I was innocent and how the election was stolen from me and blah, 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 blah. If you don't say all that stuff, I'm going to attack you with my base. He'll own them to the moment he shuttles off this earth. That's what they allowed him to do by allowing him to take over their party. So you know what? Like, it's still that same strategy. And the truth of the matter is who knows if it ends there? Maybe then Don Jr. inherits it and they have to kiss his butt after that. I mean, they through their media and through their behavior and through their constant grievance mongering have created a cult, a vast cult. And it's not enough people to win an election. You know what I mean? For the most part, I mean, it is in some states, sadly, but it certainly is enough people in the culty part of it to take anybody down in a primary.
Yeah. Cliff Schechter, kind enough to join us right now. I want to as well branch out into these hearings that have happened with the, you know, they got the IRS hearing, the whistleblower hearing yesterday, which was a joke. You got Jim Jordan's,
revenge porn hearing.
Isn't it hilarious? These are the same exact Republicans who are screaming about yanking books off of shelves in schools and libraries because we want to have age appropriate things for children. They themselves screaming at America, look at the nudes of Hunter Biden. And they can't hear themselves.
First of all, she broke both D.C. and federal law. And if I assume Hunter Biden listens to your show like everybody else, please sue her. She should be prosecuted. Forget suing her for civil damages. She should be prosecuted for what she did. She showed naked images of somebody without their consent. There's laws in both D.C. and federally against that. So that's the first thing. What kind of a sick, evil person? I mean, that's the thing about these guys, the cruelty. When you see how evil they are, Ron DeSantis with COVID and Greg Abbott pushing people back into the Rio Grande and, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the hatred she has. She's never met Hunter Biden in her life, but she will destroy this person. She will do whatever it takes, and again, her, the one that was cheating on the hubby with the tantric gym guy and then the news guy and has had her own people call her out for infidelity. And I'm sorry, by the way. I don't have a problem with divorce because I don't judge other people. She judges everybody else. So this divorced woman who cheated on her husband with multiple people, right, who got up at a New York Republican, young Republican gathering, remember that, about 7 months ago, and started talking about, you can buy butt plugs. I don't know. Hopefully I can say that.
Sure. We have our own brand. We have our own brand.
like decrying how our culture is falling apart, and she literally must have said the word butt plugs enough times to make everybody uncomfortable, who once stood up with this image, with this cardboard size cutout of Donald Trump. I know I've done videos and all this stuff and started groping it in the area where you would think in front of people and talking about how big it was. It's like, she's this weird, perverted freak. And so in this party that allows her to sit on that committee and do what she just did, they're going to lecture us on anything to do with family values. Are you kidding? I mean, it's been this way a long time, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Larry, go to the Minneapolis airport bathroom where Larry Craig was like doing some toe tapping while he was trying to pass an amendment to ban gay marriage. I mean, it's the longest running thing of the Republican Party that thou doth protest too much. But I mean, with what she did yesterday, it's sick what she did.
Isn't this, though, who these people are? I mean, I was watching on Twitter, and Tizzy Yen had a video out there, and he was talking about this sound of freedom. And the fact is they create this, this we're this moral superiority a lot of it comes from the fact that they are so morally inferior to everyone else. They're so desperate to create them as the hero of their own story that they that those are the ones that, you know, when you hear Marjorie Taylor Greene and she's out there saying these things, you know, she herself is the one of the worst human beings on the planet, but yet she has the audacity to try to judge other people, you know, and vilify them and completely just, you know, do things as she is doing. Because they basically, they themselves know it. Because it's almost like with the Republicans, as you said, it's an admission. Whenever you see this stuff, just imagine what you can imagine behind the scenes, because I guarantee you it's 10 times worse for these people. And they're just screaming their cover story at everyone else.
Well, and again, we don't have to imagine. Yeah. I mean, we now know, I mean, just sorry to pull something out of like a little bit longer ago history, but during the entire dust-up originally when we started seeing this radical side of the Republican Party for what it was, the late 90s, with the impeachment of Bill Clinton, let's be honest, they were all going after him based upon sex because they wanted to destroy him and be able to beat the Democrats who were more popular. Then we find out Ron Livingston at the time, who had to end up resigning, was having an affair. He wanted to be the next speaker after Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich, who was speaker, left the first wife in the hospital with cancer, was cheating on the second wife then with a staffer who became the third wife while he's leading this charge against Clinton. And we now found out later on that the late Ken Starr also was having an affair. Mm. So, I mean, you know, like these people, this has been it's not like, you know, we're just finding this out. You're right. This is who they've been. And this is who these types of people are, you know, 20, 25 years now. The types of people that will lecture everybody else is because deep down they're ashamed of themselves. They loathe themselves. They, you know, and sometimes it's for good reason. You know, sometimes they're interested in children, but sometimes it's because they can't accept and be happy with who they are. You're gay. Accept it and be happy with it. The rest of us are. Mm-hmm. We'll treat you as equal if you treat yourself as equal, you know, but whatever it is that they're disgusted or ashamed about, they project it onto all the rest of us. We must all be the same way they are. And the problem is we don't need your morality. Because I don't need your book, or I don't need your whatever to tell me to not cheat on my wife, to tell me to not do this, because I just know not to do it.
Yeah.
And the problem is they can't control their own behavior, so they assume the rest of us can't control our own behavior too. I'm sorry that you're like atavistic cavemen and women, and that we've actually evolved to where we can control our own impulses. You should try it sometime instead of trying to legislate how everybody lives.
Well, and just if I could correct one thing, is that they say they want everyone to live like they are. No, they create a false standard, hold everyone else to that standard, while they themselves go and get nowhere near that standard. And so, yeah.
Not it's, within 1,000 miles of it.
One last quick thing here, if you can want to chime in on this. The fact is Once again, yesterday, that meeting with the IRS agents, It was, you know, they say we're not partisan, but then they almost outright refused to want to admit all their frustrations came from when the Trump administration was in office. And this whole thing, which was supposed to be Joe Biden trying to stifle this, it was just, no, you guys, it was like an inter-office dust up, and that was all it was. And they were trying to make this into something else. Once again, these Republicans have absolutely nothing that they're trying to create this scandal out of, and there's just nothing there.
I mean, that's what happens when you become this, right? Like, there's no center. There's no political center to that party anymore. It is, honestly, they found each other the way serial killers find each other, right? The way school shooters find each other, sadly. They're a collection of amoral, deviant, resentful, angry, greedy. You know, look at the seven deadly sins and look at those and everything that the Bible told you not to do, their Bible. And add all that up, and that's what they are at this point. Like, they're drawn together by their cruelty, their greed, their resentment of anything they don't understand or anything modern. There's no political program. Have you heard them talking about any actual policies? No, they don't have any policies. I mean, I guess if you consider a policy taking rights away from people, so that maybe that's a policy. But there's no coherent anything to them anymore. So that's why you have these ridiculous show hearings, which is what they are, because they're going to show naked pictures of Hunter Biden, or today they're going to have Robert Kennedy Jr. come in to repeat his anti-Semitism. I mean, they had the guy sit down, you realize, to say, I'm not anti-Semitic. And while he was claiming he was anti-Semitic, he was saying anti-Semitic things.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm not anti-Semitic. I'm not anti-Semitic at all. I've been hugely supportive of Israel. It's like, hey, you know what, pal? Jews are different than Israel. You've just shared one of the most anti-Semitic tropes out there, that everything Israel does is Jewish, and everything Jews do is Israel. That's not the way this works. You know what I mean? That's like, I mean, what he did is equivalent to if somebody, you know, something happens in Africa, blaming everybody who's black. I mean, like, you know, it's utterly ridiculous, and it's one of those nefarious things that used all the time against American Jews and Jews in Europe. Anti-Semitic groups. So while he's sitting there saying he's not anti-Semitic, he's sharing something that's anti-Semitic. I mean, it's actually impressive in its stupidity.
Yeah.
You know, this man needs help. I know some of his family members have tried to get him off of the public stage, but he's being used by other people. He clearly is not well. His own family's reputed against him. But, you know, Steve Bannon and Jim Jordan, who invited him to speak, of course, and they feel they love him.
Oh, yeah.
Because, again, this is all about just trying to harm Joe Biden. Hunter Biden is about it. You know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., they don't care what innocent people they destroy, what lives they harm, as long as whatever it is amounts to, same thing with Benghazi when it came to Hillary Clinton, right? As long as whatever it is, whatever thing they take and use for their own purposes, no matter what the results are, destroys the Democrats so they can win the presidency back, and specifically their guy Trump, that's all that matters.
I guarantee you, no, I don't know any Democrat that's going to be voting for Kennedy, that's for sure. He's nuts. I mean,
he's nuts.
I don't
know what happened to him. I mean, I met him, you know, 7-8 years ago, and his wife at you know, I used to go to these certain events, and I won't go into it, for certain trial lawyers, and I did some, you know, I did some PR for them. And I mean, I don't know what's happened, but he didn't, and I know he wrote the thing for Rolling Stone a while ago now, so I know he's going on that path for a long time. But you know, it's gotten clearly much, much worse over the last decade. And, you know, nobody, and even the last 5 years. And I don't understand, you know, somebody, a friend, I don't know, needs to step in and intervene and get the man help. I mean, again, we don't know what certain things he was, you know, and I'm not saying this in an ad hominem way. I'm saying this is one of the few ones I have sympathy for him. He was a heroin addict for 12 years. It's a disease, like alcoholism and anything else. And 12 years of putting that poison in your body, I can't imagine the damage that can do to you, but it's not good. The fact that he lived through it is remarkable, frankly. And so, you know, somebody, please, who can take the remote control away, step in here, because you know what he's doing is not good for him. It's not good for this country. It's not good for his family. It's just awful. And the right is doing what they always do. They're using him for their purposes.
We could easily go for an hour, man. Dude, I've taken more time. I've had an extended time here with Cliff Schechter. Go find his YouTube channel. That's YouTube/C Schechter. I'll link it all there. The Blue Amp, you know, YouTube channel is exceptional. If you're not following him there, get there, subscribe, and follow his takes. Cliff, we're better than the Kansas City Royals. We're better than the Oakland A's. At the end of the day, we can take that, at least take that with us.
Hey, I actually love the Cincinnati Reds right now. Well, let's talk about the Yankees. It's not how bad they are. It's the construction and the arrogance of those that did it. That is what my problem is.
I can't figure out why they keep putting Buxton back in the lineup for the Twins. Anyway, we'll talk about that all later, okay? We'll talk about that later. Cliff Schechter, thank you, Cliff. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, you take care.
Take care, my friend. Cliff Schechter, once again, Blue Amp YouTube channel, YouTube/C Schechter. Wow, we went long. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Yeah, you know, we used to carry Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He was used to be on Ring of Fire here. And I don't know. I think I've thought about him a little bit. And as Cliff brought up, he had an addiction issue. I think it's not that hard to understand why someone who had a heroin addiction might be a little worried about needles in the future. And it led to his really big anti-vax stances, which I've always thought was far more about that than it was about believing this. And proof of that came today. United States Representative Stacey Plaskett, who is the Democrat from the Virgin Islands, blew a massive hole in the Democratic presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s anti-vaccine stance during a House Judiciary Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government hearing on Thursday. Lawmakers on Tuesday were urged by the Congressional Integrity Project to disinvite Kennedy over fears that giving him a microphone could be an opportunity for Kennedy to double down on conspiracy theories such as claims that COVID-19 is targeted to infect black and Caucasian people at a higher rate than other population groups. But Plaskett presented evidence that Kennedy's anti-vax views did not actually apply to his immediate family. You know, Mr. Kennedy's own family decries his stance on vaccines, and families disagree on a lot of things, Plaskett said while grilling Kennedy. I've got family members that, you know, we all disagree, so that doesn't mean anything. But the fact that he has famously sent a request to a party guest that they had to be vaccinated to come to his party, and I'd like to introduce to the record a letter from Lewis Silkin, the law firm representing Mr. Kennedy, which states, as he has stated repeatedly, that Kennedy vaccinated all of his children, and I'd like to be introduced that into the record. Plaskett continued, Kennedy tells the black community, myself, the mother of five black children, that I should really be careful and not necessarily have the same safeguards to protect my family, my children, from the virus that killed millions of people because I'm black. There's no secret that this is an amplification of his own platforms. You know, he's a broken dude, man. He is just a broken dude. And, you know, and the Kennedy name really kind of fell off after, who was it? Was it Edward that challenged Carter in 1980? I think it was Edward.
Ted.
When, you know, because people were like, you know, don't challenge Carter. And you know, frankly, considering that, what happened there, it sure didn't help Carter when you know, come that November. But the reality is that you look at, as you look at that family, I can see here's a guy that thinks to himself, that he's got a legacy, he's got this, and it just doesn't come from him. I mean, it was with JFK Jr. and of course he tragically died. Although every conservative, and I posted on the Friday link last week the Jordan Klepper famously from The Daily Show on his podcast talking about, where in the world did this idea that the far right was embracing Kennedy come from? It's an interesting discussion that they do have on that. But the reality is that, you know, I think that there's this feeling like he's owed something, and when the Democrats didn't give it to him, he's glad. Well, if the Republicans, you know, who are only using him to try to basically carve into Biden's support, I think it's a mistake. As a matter of fact, can I say this? Both him and Joe Manchin, I don't think do Republicans realize? I don't know too many Democrats who are scrambling to join Joe Manchin. You know, sure, it might cost you a few in West Virginia, but that state wasn't going to be going for the Democrats anyway. You know, so, you know, it's you guys think that there's this movement to try to get Manchin to run as a third party candidate. I think if you're a Republican, considering how many moderate Republicans can't stand Donald Trump, I think you'd be far more concerned about Manchin pulling away your voters than, you know, Biden voters going to Manchin. So anyway, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I did want to comment on a story that I posted earlier in the day. And it just was the picture. And it's just the arsenal that the Fargo assailant, who killed one police officer, injured two others, what he had in his car, which is unbelievable. You know, three assault weapons, it looks like three assault pistols, two knives. This insane arsenal of weaponry. And there's a part of me that when you look at this and you lay this all out there, that you have to ask yourself the question of whether or not that's a how did this become normal? How did this become normal? I mean, how did this become normal? Now, I've had a few discussions with gun guys today, and let me review my mentality towards the guns. I grew up in a hunting family. There were shotguns and rifles, had no problem with those. Those are growing up. And I still do not have any problem with that. A weapon that was designed to shoot ducks or pheasant or deer or elk. Don't really have a problem with those. And I know there are some people out there who are, you know, against this. I understand. I grew up in a hunting family. It was part of that culture, and I don't have a problem with hunting weapons. I don't. But those weapons were designed to hunt animals. I do not like personal defense pistols, but I don't really have a problem with a person having a personal defense pistol as long as they go through background checks, they go through training, stuff like that. I don't have any problem with that. I have a very hard time with anyone having a weapon which was designed when someone sat down with a pen and paper or pencil and paper to start designing the weapon, the design was to kill as many human beings as possible as quickly as possible. It was designed for military combat or security purposes, that if you had to do it, you could shoot people if you had to do it. And those being prevalent and pretty much the most common guns you see sold in America today is really disturbing. But that's just the way things are. That's the way this whole thing is. And I completely think the assault weapon should be taken off the board. I mean, they're designed to kill human beings. That's what they're designed for. They're not designed for hunting. They're not designed there. You know, sure, if grandpa brought one back from Vietnam that you want to have up on your wall as a memory, I would think that a photo of your grandpa would be more appropriate. But sure, if you have a historic weapon like that, I guess so. But at the same time, I just can't see the need for it. Now, I know a lot of people who are pro-gun people. A lot of them. Here is your standard person I know that likes guns, what they have. Between 5 and 10 hunting weapons, some of which are family heirlooms. You know, there's always one gun. This was my grandfather's gun. This was my dad's gun. This was my mom's gun. They hunted with this. I got pictures. There's always a picture up. I have a friend that has a gun cabinet, keeps his gun, you know, weapons in there, unloaded, you know, safe, away from the kids. Has a lovely picture of his mom smiling in a duck blind. With the shotgun, which he does now own, and it's kind of a, you know, memories for him going and hunting. They obviously they like duck, and so it was kind of one of those things where they, you know, is kind of a, and you know, I get that, and I can see that because that reminds me of my youth, and you know, the pictures of my father when he was in the duck blind and stuff like that. So I get that. Those are there. They then either have a one pistol and or one assault weapon. That's all they have. And I, you know, the ones I know, the friends I have who are gun fans, who are, I would almost qualify as responsible gun owners. They don't have their guns lying around loaded. They don't have their guns where a kid can find them. They keep them under lock and key. They're not strapping them to the back. I have one friend who has an assault weapon. He said, I would, you know, here's one thing you should understand. That for him is kind of a toy. He goes to a shooting range and he uses it just to fire at targets there. He kind of says, this is just, it's for the purpose of it. He goes, I would never carry this out in public. I would not be one of these knuckleheads that strapped it to his back and goes to a coffee shop. I would never do that. It goes in a case to the firing range, comes on out. It doesn't even get loaded until I'm on the range, fire the weapons, clear the weapon, bring it back, clean it, put it back in the case and take it back home. That's what he does with it. So that's what they have. When you look at the picture that's associated with the Star Tribune article on this gun guy, and you see this, the first thing that should run through all of our minds is, what in the hell is this guy getting all these guns for? And there is this false idea in this world that this is normal. No, you're a crazed psychopath who's a gun worshiper. And that's the best case scenario for you. You're a gun worshiper. That's your best case scenario. Worst case scenario, you're a deranged individual who's just waiting for your time to take your arsenal out and start firing it around with people. Because this is not normal. And how in the hell did we get to a point where we look at this and we all don't go, like, how in the hell did this bag after bag after bag after bag of ammunition? enough ammunition there to start a revolt in a third world country, for God's sakes. How can anyone amass an arsenal like this? And here's the problem, is that this is the system. Republicans have encouraged this. Everyone smiles. You build up these arsenals. No one with a sane drop of DNA in their brain would ever look at this and say, you know what? This is a great idea. Let's just allow everyone to keep building weapons. You got two hands. You know, I get it. You think that that scene from Tremors is going to happen where the giant worm comes through your basement and thank God you've got 50 loaded weapons behind you that you can use to take out the worm. That's not real. You sit there and you have the audacity to complain about the cost of groceries or the cost of gasoline while you've bought your ninth gun, which you're in on, you idiots. This is the one that the guy used in the school shooting. Like it's a good thing. And nobody batted an eye. This guy was allowed to do this with a smile on their face and come back, see you next week. We'll have some more ammunition in for you. Cleared out the stock today. And no one said, wow, why is that guy getting more ammunition than a battery in the military? That doesn't seem like a good idea. No one cared until he decided to do what he was intending to do and open fire on police officers. Killing one, wounding two others. We have had so many cases that like this, that are just tragic. In small town, not in the inner city, no, in these small towns where two and three officers are getting shot and killed. Why? Because we look at this as some sort of, oh, that's okay. That's just Phil, the 12-time loser in town who can't keep a girlfriend to save himself, has been fired from so many jobs. He's just got his 14th gun and he bought another pallet full of bullets. You know, America. And you think to yourself, like, how in the hell do we get to this point? There are a lot of good gun owners out there. There are. And there are a lot of law enforcement people. And until you guys look at these clowns and say, what the hell are you doing, you idiots? This is going to continue. And it's going to be dead police officers and dead civilians going to a grocery store, at a library, going to a school, at a concert. It doesn't matter. This one picture scares me because we should see this. This, when I was a kid in the 70s, and you had a criminal that had an arsenal like this, we would call them terrorists. We were calling all the signs were there. We would call him gun worshiper. He was a lit fuse looking to explode. We would say all that. Today, he's just Phil, who's got lots of grudges and angries and runs a blog with an enemies list. And nobody says anything. Maybe the problem here is we're not paying attention anymore. You can still be a responsible gun owner and not have a freaking arsenal. It is a tragedy. It is, and of course, by the way, I've had the guns are the greatest thing. Oh, shut up. Just shut up. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. This story broke yesterday. I didn't get a chance to get to it. Nearly 14,000 Minnesota borrowers will have their federal student loans automatically forgiven in the coming weeks, according to new data released by the Department of Education. The debt cancellation is a result of the Biden administration's effort to fix errors in the way the government previously handled loans under income-driven repayment plans. Those plans allow borrowers to pay a fixed percentage of their income over a set period of time, usually 20 to 25 years. In a press release, Education Secretary Miguel Cardona said that the Department of Education has failed to credit previous qualifying payments that should have counted towards borrowers' repayment periods. For far too long, borrowers fell through the cracks of the broken system that failed to keep accurate track of their progress on loan forgiveness. So you're going to get 14,000 people in the state of Minnesota are going to all of a sudden not have student loan debt. In Minnesota, $645 million in student loan debt will be forgiven. The borrowers affected are just a fraction of the 700,000 who would have qualified for Biden's broader forgiveness program that was recently struck down by the Supreme Court. Now, I want to do two things here with this. And first of all, if you are a Republican and you're like, how dare you, you know, because that's just what you do nowadays. This is going to be 17,000 people that are going to have more discretionary income, hopefully. Maybe not all of them. I mean, it's going to be individual cases, but a lot of them are. And that's going to help spur spending in the state. And that's a good thing. And that's for every state in the country. So where you sit there and you keep screaming, this is a government handout. No, it's in the end, what it is a spending program that's going to actually work. And every time the Democrats have done something of this nature where we've basically help people get more money that they can spend, it has done wonders for the economy. And trust me, if we would have been able to get the 700,000 people, you know, the student loans forgiven, it would have been an astronomical boost to the economy. And as a matter of fact, the Republicans know this. That's why they're happy it stopped. That's why they're happy it stopped, because they don't want the economy doing well, because it makes their argument harder to not vote for Joe Biden. So it has nothing to do with any of you there. It just has to do with the fact that they want this country to be angry and miserable and broke, and that's just who the Republicans are. I would be remiss if the other side of that story is if you are someone with student loans, there's one party that's trying to help you with this problem. There is one party. That's the Democratic Party. And the Republican Party is committed to making sure that you never get out of debt ever. And the reality is that this has got to be something that matters to you. Joe Biden was criticized saying he's not doing enough. Well, he immediately comes in with a slash of the pen and saves a whole bunch of people some money with student loans. And notice the Republicans really can't stop this time. So it's going to happen. If you want it to happen for everyone, well, you just have to vote Republican. And that's just the case. And that's not a giveaway, because what it is it's an investment. That money comes back into the economy. It does. It generally comes back tenfold. Or I shouldn't say that. A lot more. Hour two coming up next. Hour number two on your Thursday. Good to be with you once again, Matt and Brett. Once again, just in clear, I might have stumbled a little bit. No, don't trust the Republican Party with your student loans. They want you to pay forever. They're not the solution. You want education that's affordable. That's the DFL. That's the Democratic Party. That's just that. Want to clarify that really quick, just in case I hadn't missed anything there.
Yeah, I don't think people are generally, hopefully not voting Republican if they want student loan forgiveness.
Feeding the hungry? Well, these Republicans sound great. No, they're not. No. If you're talking about Hungary being the wealthiest people at the expense of everyone else, sure. We have a birthday boy joining us right now.
Really? Okay.
Dr. Joe Eastman is kind enough to join us. Dr. Joe is our COVID specialist. We have been talking with him for years about this. We got getting an update on with that today, as well as other things. And he's going to talk climate, too, because he follows that because he's smart. And it is his birthday. He is 22 years old. Dr. Joe, happy birthday to you, my friend.
Thank you, kind sir. But I'm going to have to say I'm very disappointed he didn't play me Casey and Roundhouse happy birthday song today.
I, I don't do requests, man. This is not a music show. What are you talking about? I could sing for you. Would you? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Dr. Joe. Happy birthday to you. How about that?
Oh, that suffices.
Dr. Joe, kind enough to chat with us about how things are going with this. I wanted to, you know, start off, if you don't mind, the Star Tribune, shockingly, and it's because we were so used to these stories for so long, they shockingly covered COVID today. And so I've got some numbers for us here. The 40 COVID deaths reported in Minnesota in June, 40 people died in June. The lowest monthly total since March of 2020, the start of the three-year pandemic. While preliminary, the total halves the 83 COVID deaths in May, falls well behind the 239 deaths in January, according to the Thursday weekly update by the Minnesota Department of Health. It states COVID total now is 14,896. Wow. They once again go on to say seniors account for 83% of the deaths, but that doesn't that's a qualifier. I mean, it's still a 14,896 dead. First of all, your thoughts on this? I mean, it is definitely a lot better than it was. Although it is terrifying how numb we have come to the idea that 40 people dying of anything in a given month in the state is no big deal. Before the pandemic, if 40 people died, we would have rolled out the entire state government to try to stop whatever it was. Today, we're high fiving and celebrating and really basically doing nothing to stop it anymore.
Yeah, I guess you could say we enjoy it while you can. it's getting so hard to find any stories covered anywhere. This is a shocker. I did not see that. Thanks for pointing that out. But 40 deaths. Come on, folks. And the other thing people don't realize, we got a lot of people that are getting long COVID now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be paying for this for a long time if we don't do something right now. So, it's good to see a little coverage, but we need more. we got a lot of things going on right now.
Now, one of the things, and I want to come back to the long COVID here in a second, but let's touch back on these numbers because once again, we should note the 4th of July, the last 2 years, since 2020, has acted as a pivot point. We've had a gradually downward trend in cases. Comes the 4th of July, and we start the long, slow uphill towards the fall. And it's so far, there's been a small increase in cases. July 4th has been a pivot point of the pandemic each year. Minnesota officials are monitoring whether holiday gatherings produced a measurable increase in viral transmissions. Hospitalizations in Minnesota increased from 43 a week ago to 61 on Tuesday. Neither number threatens the state's health system. So basically, there's an increase in hospitalizations, and the sewage sampling in Metropolitan Wastewater Plant has shown a slight increase the last week. So once again, it might not be as robust as we've seen, especially in 2020, 2021, 2022, but we are still seeing, once again, what looks like a July 4th effect, where we're seeing more signs of at least increased cases and increased virus in the sample sizes.
Yeah, you got that right. I was just going to point that out today. If you look at it nationally, it was back in beginning of June. We were probably about 1.1 million active cases on a given day. Since that time, we've creeped up to about 1.5 million active cases, and this is estimates based on the CDC and the some of their wastewater data. They bring in hospitalizations and deaths and things, but it's still vastly underreported in terms of the magnitude of the number. So it's increased nationally, but in the past summers we've been seeing this where it starts increasing more in the south. You know, as things get hot and people are stuck in their air conditioning and such without adequate ventilation, recirculation or fresh air coming in, it started going up in the south, and then we'd see it climb in the northern states. But if you look at it regionally now, every single region in the country is starting to climb up, and it's it's fairly dramatic since the middle of June, and it's really started ramping up since, like you say, the 4th. I'm starting to notice the western part of the country is just kind of skyrocketing at the moment. So keep your eye on it. You know, we got the new virus that is kind of kicking butt around here now is the EG.5, another recombinant, and it's got a 37% growth advantage over the dominant one right now, which is XBB 1.16. So, and that's the one that's dominating right now. And if you've noticed and are following things, the XBB 1.5, which was dominant for quite a while, and is going to be used in our new cocktail for our boosters in this September, is almost faded. It's faded quite a bit since before, and that's what our vaccine is going to be based on, even though 4 to 5 months ago, me and a bunch of other scientists were saying, no, you can't go this way. That thing is going to be gone here by the time we roll out the booster. The good thing is, it's still going to offer protection for these XBB combined virus types that we're seeing so prevalent now. So that's kind of the good news. If you haven't got your booster yet and you're due for it, I it's your choice, of course, but I would recommend waiting for the new monovalent booster to come out this fall and go with that. That's going to give you the maximum protection.
They were saying 69% of the elderly have gotten their boosters and everything. So that's one of the reasons why it's doing better. And we, you know, to be fair, the numbers are down. Once again, 40 is a low number, but still it's 40 people that died because of COVID in the month of June. That being said, can you, you know, for everyone out there, so when they come up with a flu vaccine every year, is it, you know, obviously one of the things that it seems to imply here is that the flu virus that happens, it just doesn't change that much. That you can, you know, it's really not, you know, that much of a deviation, whereas we're seeing wild swings, it almost feels like, with COVID, that, you know, it's, correct, you know, that this vaccination that comes out, the virus has changed so dramatically that the concept of what we do with the flu vaccine is just not going to work here because it's changes so dramatically between variant after variant.
You've hit the nail right on the head, man. You know, and you can think about it. It's kind of like raising a kid. You know, when they're young, they're pretty wild and they're doing all kinds of things. And then as they grow older, you know, they get more in line, or whatever you would call it, just start to mature and everything. Well, it's the same thing goes for the evolution of these viruses. The flu's been around forever, of course, and this COVID is still a young toddler, and we still got about 90% of likely mutations to go before we reach kind of the mature phase where it's not going to change much anymore from year to year. So, you nailed it just right. These comparisons with flu and COVID, because the way things are going right now, just drive us scientists right up a tree. It's like, oh, gosh, please, no, don't do this. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I am starting to forecast RSV and flu, and I just saw that Kansas City is really getting their preschool is in session right now, and they're really starting to see a big respiratory surge there. And the scary thing is it's mainly occurring in the pre-K kids. The adolescents are about 14%, and the pre-K kids are 41% showing symptoms now, and that's an astonishing number for for an area.
And that's Kansas City.
See that this early.
And that's Kansas City.
And that's in Kansas City, yeah, yeah. I'll follow up on that later, but, yeah, it's kind of frightening.
There has been a lot of research here done in the last few months. Once again, thank you, scientists. In regards to what is dictating how some people get COVID, because there 20% of people didn't even know they had it until they took a test. A study published by the Journal of Nature on Wednesday shows that people who carry a common change to genes that code for certain immune system molecules that sit on the surface of cells called human leukocyte antigens, or HLAs, are more likely to have COVID-19 without any symptoms. Another study, which was recently posted online as a preprint ahead of peer review and publication, found that individuals with certain changes to genes near FOXP4, which codes for a protein active in the lungs and immune system, appear to be more likely to develop long COVID. So we are understanding, I mean, and this is helpful because, I guess the first question I'll ask you is, how easy is it to screen for these kind of genes? And, you know, if I was to go in, I mean, is that something that they can do quickly, or is that something that you really have to do kind of an advanced study to determine whether or not you'll have a predetermination for long COVID or not to have COVID at all?
No, this is something they could do as a standard part of, testing people when they come in. It really does need to be done. I don't know why it's not. I guess probably the bottom line is dollars would be what I was thinking. I mean, who's going to pay for it?
Yeah.
Because they're not cheap tests either. It's not like something real simple that way. But it does take some lab work. You could get a turnaround in like a day and know what's going on. And there, besides those two studies you mentioned, there's another one that is also showing a similar result to the FOXP4. And I kind of summarize those in one of my latest Substacks so people can read a little more about it. And the one study you just mentioned first is really actually gives me hope because, we can not only detect better people that have it or are likely to not test positive for it if we know that a priori, but when we start looking at the genetic engineering and some of the therapeutics and some other possible like nasal treatment preventions for instead of vaccines and taking that kind of route just to prevent infections, this might have some pretty big implications. So I was really excited when I saw that study yesterday. And, you said 20%. And now I'm now working with a group in the World Health Network, a bunch of scientists from all over the world. And when I talk to these people from other parts of the world, they're looking at about 60% asymptomatic, which it absolutely floored me because mm-hmm. you think about that. Think how many people are walking around right now with that damn virus.
Yeah, well, like, and that's the thing is, on one side, you're not getting the symptoms. The other side, you're carrying the virus. And so someone that can get the symptoms can get it. But, you know, it's
that's right. And it's made it. Hopefully you didn't get a big dose when you caught it. That's a big thing, you know, how much somebody sneezes on you, boy, run. but that's the big thing is we have to do something about slowing this down. So, you know, the other day I brought you, sent you a little thing about my new air quality monitor.
Mm-hmm.
And I use this thing to... when I go around to businesses, and yesterday I caused the biggest panic in my dentist's office. The whole place essentially shut down and gathered around me, and I'm like, do you realize your CO2 is 10 times higher than what it should be, and your formaldehyde and total volatile organic carbons are 100 times what they should be? And a lady came up to me and she's like, is that why I'm feeling tired? And I said, yeah, that can do
no,
it.
Joe, when you look at her, you have to look at her and say, no, that's because you're old. but this isn't helping. No, I'm sorry. This is why you can't take me when you do these things, because I'm the witty.
I asked her if she was feeling nauseous too, and she said, yeah, I feel good right now.
You
so
shouldn't.
He's on that. He's getting it. Turns out the HVAC system had completely clogged up and shut down, and it was an absolute mess. So I went to a couple other places doing my errands and stopped at my favorite Mexican restaurant to grab something to go, and the air quality in these places was just fine. So okay. I was really encouraged by seeing that. So
well, you probably helped those people out greatly. All right, we'll come back to the COVID recap here. I did want to give you a chance. When we were talking about the – and you brought up the particles here. This is that day. We were talking about the climate change and all this stuff out there. You're a guy that deals – I mean, this is – to reality, this is the most basic form of math – you know, science out there. You just, factor them in, average them together. You know, your thoughts. I mean, the world is on fire right now.
Oh, boy. It's absolutely incredible. And, since I moved up here, I've been up here about 15 years, but I always followed my home state and kept track of the weather when I used to be an active forecaster and stuff. And I started noticing this weather pattern change about 20 years ago that I'm going, hey, things are getting a little dicey here. I'll break it down to a real basic thing here. There's a gradient between the poles and the equator, okay? It's called a temperature gradient. Naturally, the poles are colder. And what that does, when that gradient is really strong, it drives the jet stream and makes the jet stream stronger the gradient is. Well, I've noticed, and you alluded to this correctly yesterday when you were talking about the Canadian wildfires and how their springs are so warm and they're drying out so early. Well, that's part of what's going on is with the poles warmed a lot quicker, which we expected according to theory about 40 years ago, so it's not surprising. But what has happened is we've lost our jet stream. And what happens then is we don't move stuff through the country every 7 days is kind of the time scale it moves through the country. So these weather systems are sitting there and they don't have anything to push them out or steer them. And they're just sitting there spinning and we get these Hudson Bay highs that form something called an omega block. And the weather just can't go anywhere. It's mm-hmm. So we have these extreme rainfalls. You're stuck under high pressure, which is hot air, and it's going absolutely crazy. So you think about the long-term consequences. We're dealing with it here in the short term right now, but my gosh, think about it in terms of the pandemic and things like that. Everybody moving indoors because they can't be outside. That's not a good thing. for health wise and a lot of reasons for that.
One last science bit here for you before we do a quick recap on the COVID stuff. Moon landing today. And it was 69, so it's 54 years ago today. They actually walked on the moon.
That's right. And I'll never forget that because Mom and Dad and I and the family were back from visiting up north. We always did our summer vacation up here, usually on my birthday, but we did that year, and we're back, and we got the rabbit ears and tinfoils out, and we're trying to get this thing in, and we get her in, and I look at that thing, and I'm just absolutely fascinated. 7-year-old kid, this guy's walking on the moon. Wow, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. And I looked at my mom and dad, and I said, you know what? Someday I'm going to work for NASA, and I'm going to live on West North. Yeah. I didn't think they'd quit laughing for 10 minutes, and I ended up doing it.
Well, they came for see, as I grew up with the science of the hot side stays hot and the cool side stays cool, the McDLT, and that would explain a lot about how my life has turned out. But needless to say, I love a good burger. All right, so COVID recap. The numbers are down. That's good. Still 40 people dying in any given month is a bad thing. We got vaccinations that are coming in. Make sure you stay up to date on the boosters. And especially if you're in the hot zones, if it gets really hot and you're inside with a lot of air conditioning, that's just, you got to keep in mind that's going to be a bad thing. And so you just, want to be careful with that and avoid Kansas City at all costs. So that sounds like what we're saying at this point.
You've got that right, brother.
I cannot. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, make sure your HVAC systems in your house and everything are doing well. That's a big thing. We can nibble around the edges and get people, slowly to get more masking, because I tell you, there is something coming probably in September and October. Not one of those major waves, unless we have a fundamentally different variant, but it's coming up again, and I guarantee that. So,
and you're also keeping track. You're also keeping track of other things like avian flu and stuff like that. Which, like you said, if we're going to get another one of these, it's going to come in. You know, they're probably coming, so we just have to be prepared for it.
Exactly.
Go Sidekick with Dr. Joe or with Greg Bakken on Ghost Box Radio. Neither one of them want me anywhere nearby if they're trying to actually convey seriousness, because I crack too many jokes. Happy
That's
birthday.
That's why we love you, man.
Happy birthday to you. Go out and take your air monitor and ruin someone else's day. Well, there you go. There's your birthday gift that keeps on giving.
I'll do that.
Just go ask them, are you sure you're all alive? I mean, just start checking. Raise your hands if you can. All right.
When I'm fishing tonight, I'll let the fish know how the CO2 is doing.
Well, it kind of a moot point when you yank him out of the water. But needless to say, may you catch as many fish as you can. Have a great ribeye tonight, my friend. Happy birthday. And bless you, my God. We're smarter because of you. And I thank you for all your knowledge that you give us every day. Thank you very much, sir.
And the feeling's mutual. You have a good one, Matt.
Take
Thanks
care.
A lot for the wishes. Yep.
Dr. Joe, birthday boy Dr. Joe here. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Schechter, Jack, Stein, Dr. Joe. I can make an argument we should put, you could put both Trace and Bill Corbett up there, too.
Oh, yeah.
We have to have those guys on regularly. But, yeah, my show is better when those guys are on. So, by the way, thank to Mark in Minneapolis for reminding me that it is the day that they walked on the moon. And... you know, now if you want to do that, you're a liberal who wants to waste my taxpayer dollars. Think about this. You think about that moment with Dr. Joe. It was his birthday, right? How that moment influenced his life and made all of our lives better. Heaven forbid we do that.
I love that, telling his parents he's going to work for NASA and live on a lake.
Yep.
Lo and behold, he did it.
Yeah. Sounds like parents didn't trust him. Well, take him to task, Dr. Joe. I do want to go with him to some of these businesses and just start doing their air quality and just like, holy God! I mean, boy, that seems a smidge high. Pardon me while I go wait outside when Dr. Joe gives you the happy news. Don't breathe too deeply, Joe.
Yeah, you wouldn't survive many stops, I would think, before he would kick you out of that. Kick you out of whatever the official truck is he's driving to all these things.
Wow. Either you've got an HVAC problem or someone's got some bad gas. I'm going to guess you. No. No, you don't want to take me. No, you don't want to meet. I just cannot be serious for too long. 952-946-6205. Actually, I can. Do you remember when I talked about, hey, you remember when that nuclear power plant was leaking some water? And I said, hey, you know, I hope this doesn't turn out to be one of those cases where every time they do a press release on this, it gets kind of, you know, worse and worse and worse. Remember when I said that? Remember when I was saying, hey, you know, it was like a dribble of water fell on the ground and no problem. Then it was, oh, it was a few gallons, but we got a mopper out there and that's no problem. And then it was, okay, so we've created this plume of nuclear water under the ground, but hey, it should stay there. And I kept saying to myself, I have a feeling this is going to get worse. Remember that? I remember that.
Yeah, it's kind of the dripping of the negative news with this.
Hey, there's an update on this story. A plume of radioactive water that's been lingering under the XL nuclear power plant in Monticello may have seeped into the Mississippi River, the utility said on Thursday. It's going to be the Simpsons! The three-eyed fish! Okay, but good news, everybody. The plume that was originally a trickle, a few drops, and now it's a plume, now it's seeped into the Mississippi River. Good news. The amount of nuclear material is so low, it hasn't even been detected in the water. But it's probably there. By the way, I can't wait for the guy that pulls like the 800-pound trout out of the water. That's got like one arm.
This is the usually the origin of superheroes.
Or villains or monsters. It's one of the two. I wouldn't advise trying to do your superhero story here because, yeah, it's a nuclear power plant that seems to be leaking. But, you know, hey, maybe we get – well, it's not going to be – we can't do the turtle because that's Godzilla. We don't really have any salamanders, I think, that could go to that size. Maybe it's like a – just a unruly beaver. Is that just me or is that beaver like 20,000 pounds and 8 feet tall? It's chewing down all the trees, man. That's not good.
If we could have like a super walleye or something.
Oh, no, I'm going with a beaver because it's like whenever you have a story about Uranus, it's just, you know, the comedy just starts rolling with that stuff. Come on. So giant nuclear beaver. You know, any port in the storm, kids. Anyway. Sorry. This is why Dr. Joe can't take me anywhere. Right there. A news release on Thursday, XL said that the tritium, a mildly reactive form of hydrogen, delicious, had been detected in low levels in a monitoring well 30 feet from the edge of the Mississippi River. The Environmental Protection Agency's health limit for tritium in drinking water is 20,000 per picoliters per liter. A sample taken on the well showed 1,000 picoliters, according to the XL Energy Center. Hey, so it's just a little bit of nuclear material. State pardon me here while I shuffle my briefs here. The state health and environmental regulators said that their own tritium that no tritium had shown up in the river testing downstream, just downstream of the Monticello plant. Okay. The situation does not present a threat to the public health, and there's no immediate impacts to the safety of drinking water or private wells. Oh, you really want to go down to the private wells now? Okay. Said Andrea Kronauer, a spokesperson for the Minnesota Pollution Agency, wrote in an email. Still, the potential release into the river shows the challenge of managing the underground plume of nuclear material that persists at Monticello some 7 months after XL first found and patched the leaking pipe. You know, it was just dribble. Guys, okay. Do you realize how ludicrous you sound when every few weeks you're having to come on out and say, hey, yeah, you remember when we said this is going to be easily contained? Well, oopsie. And you remember when we said we're not concerned about private wells anymore? Well, oopsie. And you remember when we said it was just a little bit was getting into the Mississippi River? Well, oopsie. The crazy part about this is that we have always said, you know, the dangerous part about these nuclear power plants that we have is that they're on the river and that flooding can happen and a natural disaster could cause damage, just like the Fukushima plant over in Japan where the tidal wave went and smacked into the nuclear power plant. No one could have predicted that because it was such a big nuclear tidal wave, but you still, it's a natural disaster. This isn't a natural disaster. This is some guy. Hey, Phil, put your tongue on that over there. See if that is that got a minty taste? Well, that means it's tritium. No, I don't know. No, no, no. Okay, my joke went too far. Do not stick your tongue on any tritium. I'm not sure of the flavor. It could be, you know, the Starry, which is kind of a crappy Sprite. Let's just be honest with you. It could be Starry. It could be like a Red Bull, and you don't want that. Or it could be like you put nuclear, you know, a charge there. But once again, superpower origin story. Look, I'm called the tongue. No, I don't. How exactly do you fight crime again? Well, I'm getting t-shirts made. That's all. I'm just getting t-shirts made of the tongue. So before you come out with your next press release, maybe, just maybe, ask yourself the question, should we just kind of, hey, this is bad. We know it's bad. This was an oops. This was a man-made oops. And I get it. We don't want people to sue us, but we got to do more due diligence. Because is there anyone besides myself that doesn't think, in the next 3 or 4 months, we're going to have some place further downstream in the Mississippi River report, oh, look, it's tritium showing up on their things. And everyone's like, how did that happen? And I said, you know, you remember when you were leaking water from the nuclear power plant that you said you fixed and didn't got it all taken care of? And by the way, how repetitive is this when it comes to like an oil pipeline? Oh, 4 teaspoons of oil leaked out of it. Oh, when we said 4 teaspoons, what we really meant was 100,000 barrels of oil. What we really meant was 2 million barrels of oil, and that river is now polluted, so, and everything died in it. You know, come on, I'm tired of this crap. The tritium is drifting in the direction of the river, but utility spokesman Kevin Koss wrote then that we are confident in our ability to keep the extent of the affected underground water limited to the site's property. Well, you see, you keep saying stuff like this, and it keeps coming back, and stop. Just stop. Stop. You know, and yeah, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I guess with the man-made problem of the leaking nuclear material out of the power plant, I guess we should be grateful that it's not really, really nuclear. But I guess at the same time, what does this tell you about the management and the people running that place? They don't seem to be taking it too freaking seriously. And yeah. Let me take Stan here real quick. Stan is in Chanhassen. He wanted to chime about nuclear leaks. Let me take your phone call before I get into the next story. Welcome on in, Stan.
Yeah, you know, it's sad. This is a bit of a comedy of errors. By doing these PRs, they're trying to, like, get ahead of the curve, but then they're not fixing the problem. And it kind of reminded me, as you were talking about it, is that, you know, when Chernobyl happened, you know, the Russians were going to, or the Soviets, I should say, we're going to try to, like, hide the thing, right?
Yeah.
But suddenly these people were walking around Europe in places like, Germany, Finland, Norway, with Geiger counters, finding, like, these puddles of rainwater that were highly radioactive. And it's like, okay, well, let's follow the wind trail here. Where did this come from? Somewhere in Ukraine. And, you know, then it was like the Soviet Union had to come out and admit that this was a problem, a huge problem. But it's like, Excel, I don't know what they're thinking here. It's like, you know, they're trying to, like, reverse fix the problem but giving the image of trying to get ahead of it. It's sending really incompetent and, I don't know, conflicting messages about what their strategy is, which appears to be nothing right now.
No, it does. And Stan, I appreciate the phone call. Thank you very much. Okay, what happened at Chernobyl is not what's happening at the XL Energy Center, or the XL Energy Center, the XL Nuclear Power Plant. It's not, but. At the same time, and by the way, did you ever see that Chernobyl series that they had on, I think it was HBO? Did you ever see that?
I think, yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. And it recounts what exactly happened there. And Stan was right. It's just there was this attempt to basically, even within their own country, to deny that this had happened. And it was, you know, people at other nuclear power plants, you know, miles away, having alarms go off like crazy. They're saying, wait a second, this is not our plant. What plant is this? And yeah, it was a problem. But okay, once again, that was Chernobyl. That's not what's going on here. But at the same time, it does seem like a freaking comedy of errors. And every time you come on out, it's okay, let's make note of the day. It's July 20th. When's the next press release saying, oh, by the way, we have now discovered tritium in the Mississippi River. Oh yeah, we have discovered tritium in people's private wells. How long? And I just think that, you know, at no point, I mean, have you fired the people that were responsible for this? Because I think you should fire the people that were responsible for this. Anyone that doesn't take, I mean, if you walk into a nuclear power plant and you say, well, that kind of nuclear material leaking from the plant's okay. Someone was not doing their job. Someone was not doing their due diligence. Someone was not checking things that should have been checked. And I guarantee you there's a trail here that says something. You probably can even track it back to the beginning of where this all leak started and someone just wasn't paying attention. And here you go. Let's move away from more serious topics to more disturbing topics. This is, of course, the story from, was it Jason Aldean is the country singer who is put forward this try that in a small town story, which basically is, you know, as it's been described, the pro-lynching song. His apology was so pathetic, or his not apology, his excuse making. His argument is, well, I never said race, and I only used news footage that was actual news footage, when it was clear that the news footage he was using was basically very much race based. And you know, you can say you're not talking about race, but your imagery is about white people in a small town and those people who are not white people who are not here. And of course, we pointed out the fact that the video was filmed at the site of a notorious lynching, which he hasn't even tried to address there because I don't think there's any comment there. And I have said this, he's going to sell a lot of albums here because this is, in my mind, in my opinion, this is kind of the organization. No one at any point looked at him during this song as he was recording it and said, holy God, no, we shouldn't be doing this song. Everyone, all the record producers, the engineers, marketers, everyone went with it, thought this was a great idea. And why? Not because they didn't find the atrocious nature of it, but because they said there's a lot of people out there that really like this kind of mentality, and there's a lot of racists that will love this song. And, you know, mission accomplished. I believe it's on iTunes. It's the number two album out there. Rolling Stone magazine talked to Dr. Carlos K. Hill, a professor of African American studies at the University of Oklahoma. What was your first reaction in watching the video? Try that in a small town. It was dog whistle politics at play. There are a couple of themes. The idea that rural America is the moral center of America. That is very present theme because you see images of urban American on fire with protests, but then you have this country music singer placed in the rural area where it's tranquil and calm and peaceful. You have the rural urban divide theme. The rural America is the moral compass theme. The American urban is the chaos theme. You also have the veiled threat, try that in a small town. The song is part of the current rhetoric of the moment, the us versus them, make America great again idea. You have all of that without the artist having to touch it. But that's what's most concerning is the veiled threats of violence that, given the January 6 attacks, we should be alarmed by because we all know where it can lead. And this is a question from Rolling Stone. Aldean claimed that the statement this week, the song is the opposite, that it's actually how everyone needs to come together. All of what I see and feel is the conservative narrative of Make America Great Again, MAGA. Look at the chaos and America is unraveling. You better not try that transgender stuff in the small town. You better not try that abortion rights stuff in the small town. That's the cultural polarization of the country. That's the irresponsible part. If he's trying to create some sort of anthem to bring people together, he really missed. Rolling Stone once again. Many people have called attention to the fact that the video was partly filmed in front of the Columbia, Tennessee courthouse. Obviously, there are no references to lynching in the song. I think that the veiled threats of violence, but that would be a stretch to connect it to the history of the lynching. There are actual lynching songs, like songs that are actually about lynching black people. We can't equivocate, but at the same time, someone should have known that there was a possibility that someone would say that. The last portion of the video shows images of white people and families playing sports and hunting. And after the images of urban unrest and violent protesters, you have the imagery of white men shooting guns. So there's this deep insinuation that we have the weapons. You better not try to take our guns. The imagery of what is going on, all the work. That's what people are seizing upon. There's this insinuation that these guns are being used recreationally. But if you try that in a small town, that same mentality will be turned on you. I think it's absolutely fair assessment of this. I still think Jason Aldean, the crazy part about this clown, he was on the stage when a psychopath opened up fire in Las Vegas on a music concert, killed 60 people, wounded 400, I believe it was. And it seems just a few years later, it seems as if the mentality was, you know, I admire him for what he stood for. Really? I don't tolerate the shooting and all, but, you know, he had some legitimate grudges. He was small town coming to Vegas. Yeah, that's, you know, I don't quite get where Aldean is at. Now, I'm paraphrasing. I'm not saying that Aldean has said that directly. But how in the hell do you go through a slaughter of that nature and then put a song out like this? Because, you know, this whole idea that Aldean is, you're just misunderstanding it. No one's misunderstanding it. And like I said, I love the fact that you almost – from the get-go must have created the excuse. I never said race in the story. And sure, there's all the video images of the uprising involve black people in the cities, but that's just news footage. I don't know where you're getting the idea of what I'm saying. This is, I mean, it'd be easy just to take out Aldean, but once again, the entire process from the band. I mean, how did someone in the band not look at it as like, whoa, dude, what are we doing again? It's kind of like that skit with Neil Diamond on Saturday Night Live. Like, dude, leave me out of this, man. Don't talk about it. What are you doing? You got the producer, you got the engineers. No one at any point said, whoa, what are you doing here? No one at the record company who said, hey, what are you doing here? No one on the music video said, what are you doing here? Marketing department, no one, what are you doing here? Nope, they all went with it. And the reason why is this. It will make them a ton of money, and it's easier for them to apologize for being wrong or feign that they're still on some moral high ground like Aldean is trying to do than it is to pull the song and not make the money. It is what it is. That's what I see. CMT, good for them, by the way, have pulled the video because even the Country Music Television Channel looked at this and said, no. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. Two updates on Minneapolis stuff that, you know, hey, I don't know. Aldean might have used them in the video. We'll talk about that. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. By the way, you can follow the show on all the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, Mastodon, Blue Sky, and on Threads. Find me there. Test type in Matt McNeil Show. You should be able to find me on those. 952-946-6205. Quick updates on two Minneapolis stories here. I've talked a lot of national stuff today, so I wanted to mention this as well. Minneapolis PlayStation set ablaze during the 2020 riots that followed George Floyd's murder won't be rebuilt in the same place. I agree with this decision, by the way. The city council voted 12 to 1 Thursday to eliminate the site at the corner of Minnehaha and East Lake Street as an option for the Third Precinct's future headquarters. The fate of the station, which was looted and destroyed in the third night of the civil unrest, has sparked heated debate, with some residents arguing that the site should be razed and turned into a memorial. Proposals from the city to rebuild the headquarters at or even near its former site have been met with pushback from community members. Still, the community doesn't even want the precinct there anymore. The council directed city staff to move forward with a plan to temporarily house officers assigned to the post at downtown Century Plaza, which is outside of the precinct's boundaries. Okay. Once again, just a sign of how bad of damage the Minneapolis police did to the Third Precinct and the people of that precinct. Yeah, we're going to have to put you outside of the precinct. Discussions on what to do with the destroyed buildings, which have been boarded up and fenced since the summer of 2020, are expected to continue. Well, yeah, for goodness sakes, I mean, just sell the land. And, you know, I don't know if you want to do a memorial there. I think, you know, 30th in Chicago is a better place for the memorial. I've actually been very vocal. I would hope they would shut down that intersection and put tunnels underneath it or whatever the case may be. Find some way to basically shut down that intersection and make that the memorial. I don't know if necessarily we should have one there. On that, with the former site of the Third Precinct, I'm sure some developer would buy that lot of land in a heartbeat. And like everywhere else now, especially with the light rail line there, it'll be, you know, 12 stories of residential, and the basement floor would be all, you know, commercial. And there you go. That's what's getting built all over the place now. Speaking of that horrible incident, former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin will ask the U.S. Supreme Court to review his conviction for second-degree murder in the killing of George Floyd, now that the Minnesota Supreme Court has declined to hear the case. The state's highest court, without comment, denied Chauvin's petition in a one-page order dated Tuesday, letting Chauvin's conviction and 22-and-a-half-year sentence stand. Chauvin faces long odds at the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, which hears only about 100 to 150 appeals of the more than 7,000 cases it's asked to review every year. Floyd, who is black, died on May 25th, 2020, after Chauvin, who is white, pressed his knee on the neck for 9.5 minutes on the street outside a convenience store where Floyd was brought out to the street by the police. A bystander who captured Floyd's fading cries of "I can't breathe." Floyd's death touched off a potential protest worldwide, some of which turned violent and forced the national reckoning with police brutality and racism still playing out. And it should be reminded of the protests here. A lot of those, including a lot of the damage that was done to the city, were done by white supremacists, not from the city, who came into the city to cause chaos. Mm-hmm. Here's the line. Chauvin's attorney, William Moorman, told the Associated Press that they were obviously disappointed in the decision. He said the most significant issue on which they have appealed was whether holding the proceedings in Minneapolis in 2021 deprived Chauvin of his right to a fair trial due to the pretrial publicity and concerns for violence in the event of the acquittal. He said it will now raise the issue with the U.S. Supreme Court. Hey, here's an idea. Maybe you shouldn't have murdered George Floyd, because if you hadn't done that, people wouldn't have been pissed. And by the way, George Floyd was the match that lit the fire, but the kindling was piled high, considering the third people that live in the third precinct don't want you guys back in the third precinct. That should tell you a lot right there. Native Roots Radio, I'm Awake. That's coming up next. We are back on a Friday. Have a good one. Till then, see ya.